it surprises me just how rigid most schools were in thinking, hey, we already have the schedule. We can't change the schedule. We can't change what people are teaching. You know, newsflash, pandemic, change everything, right? Really start over and really rethink everything at that point.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones, sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Tiffany.
We are so excited to have some of our favorite guests back today. If you did not catch part one of their series, you can go back and find it on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or our website, digitaltolearn.com. Our guests today are Eddie Maloney and Josh Kim. Welcome, Eddie.
Hey, Tiffany. Hey, Brad. Thanks for having us.
Okay. Glad to have you here.
And welcome, Josh.
Hey, Tiffany. Hey, Brad.
I think these two should get some kind of medal or award of some sort for being brave enough to come back and join us again.
We'll look for it in the mail.
let me try a theory on you. If you think about back to March, April, we were all sent home into our own spaces in a very abrupt way. And from the people that I've been talking with, it seems like that began people thinking about, it kind of took us away from the day-to-day pressures of being on campus, going to class, getting things done, all that. We still did those things, but in a different way. And I think in some ways it freed us up to think about new ideas, new opportunities. And the other part of that dynamic, I think, has been this whole idea of connecting on Zoom or some other web conferencing tool. I found that meetings have become more intentional on one hand. And then secondly, people seem more willing to take a risk to share a new idea, perhaps differently than they would sitting around a table in a conference room. How's that sound?
I think, a really great observation. I think I need to sit with that for a second, just to kind of think through what that means for the classroom space. I mean, I think you're right. I think in certainly certain contexts, meetings are different. There are fewer meetings where I feel like people are sitting around and trying to, you know, just sort of wait for someone else to speak. It's a little bit harder for there to be even front of the room meetings right now where there's only one person kind of engaged. There's something more democratic, I suppose, about the Hollywood squares that we're now all embodying. So that's interesting. I mean, I think in the classroom space, there are so many other dynamics that come into play that it's hard to know if that's going to translate quite as easily. So do students turn on all of their video? Do you have 40 students? Do you have 12 students? Do you have 150 or 200 students? You know, how does that play out in this kind of space? Josh and I have been writing a lot about and concerned about, anxious about equity issues with our students, students' access to technology, students having safe spaces at home to study, students having even private spaces, safe but public, you know, just the inequities that become really obvious that in many ways are certainly there. And we try to be really careful as we can be about this, not to say that colleges and universities simply level or create a leveling effect for everybody, because there are obviously many inequities that still are part of our students' lives and experience, lived experiences at colleges and universities. But it does shorten the depth of the distance between access to technology, shared living spaces or spaces that are, you know, more common or share common attributes and so on, access to the libraries and so on. So it's an interesting question, you know, whether or not we will find those kinds of changes that will play out in the classroom. I'm hopeful. I think there are a lot of ways in which we should and can invest in that kind of change. And we are, and I know at Georgetown we are, and a lot of schools are, you know, given what Josh, I think, just said so nicely in the previous answer, but there's still a lot to do. I think the technology still haven't caught up to where we need to be. You know, Zoom has been a godsend, as frustrating as it can be for a lot of people and is. Without Zoom, I can't even imagine, just as a thought experiment, think back to trying to do this on Skype. or WebEx or some of the other tools that were like the long-standing video conferencing tools, it would have been a nightmare.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now you've got these 15 scenarios. Do you have a favorite? And it could be one that you're hoping for, or it could be one that you just feel most confident will play out. But is there one that you can pick?
There's definitely one that I gravitate toward over all of them. And then there's another that I think is more complicated that I think would have been really important for schools to be thinking about. So I'll start there, which is, I think it would have been really helpful for schools to really rethink their curricular structure. Immediately, yeah. Quickly go to a modular or block approach. Some schools were able to manage that, but very few were. But to really take away the pressure of doing 5 classes or 4 classes intensely in an online space and to really kind of remove that from the dynamic. It surprises me just how rigid most schools were in thinking, hey, we already have the schedule. We can't change the schedule. We can't change what people are teaching. You know, newsflash, pandemic, change everything, right? Really start over and really rethink everything at that point. But the one that I gravitate toward and that I think is the most important one for anyone to invest in is the modified tutorial approach. The idea is that faculty would have some form of didactic instruction, whether that's asynchronous or synchronous. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, the engagement with students would happen in small groups, one-on-one, one-on-two. You could call it structured office hours. You could think about it in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. But really to build that sense of engagement with students, it could be faculty member to students. You could also really invest in peer mentors who would be part of those classes to help manage some of those modified tutorials, using TAs to do some of that work as well. Mm-hmm. But to recognize that probably the most important thing we can do in the fall, if we're fully remote or even in a hybrid mode, is to make sure that we are giving care and attention to our students as human beings, as part of our community. Yeah. And that means trying to really ramp up the sense of student engagement and faculty engagement. We know from the surveys that we did in the spring that our students found our faculty to be the most important element in engagement, even as they were still disconnected, distracted. And so everything we can do to leverage that, I think, is just crucial.
And it seems like we might even get better at caring for students in this venue than we do in the general schedule of classes on campus.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I mean, to tap onto what Eddie said, the through line that runs through our 15 scenarios, one of the through lines, is this idea of caring for the students. You know, as Eddie mentioned, we try to talk a lot about equity and inclusion and structural inequalities. But in each of the scenarios, we try to point out that we have an opportunity here for faculty and learners and in schools and learners to establish a different kind of relationship, one where we really understand the complexities of everyone's lives, the complexities of students' lives, the complexities of faculty and staff lives. Mm-hmm. You know, we're together in this environment from home, and put that at foreground that in all of our education. So I think that is the through line that goes through. I would say a scenario that particularly interests me, which is not one we discussed in the book, and it may be to talk about in our next work, is I'm intrigued by the idea of affordability at scale. I think about this a lot, maybe because I have a younger daughter who will be getting a master's degree soon in education when she finishes college. And I'm dreading both her going into debt or me paying for it. Both of those don't seem very good options to get a master's in education. I'm wondering if what we're learning here during COVID, if this will push the discussion for affordable, bending the cost curve of particularly master's degrees, you know, much like what Georgia Tech has done for their computer science degrees, or BU has a new MBA, or Illinois has a new MBA. This has not been on the radar at elite institutions trying to have low-cost degrees. Eddie will say that this happens with schools of continuing studies, extension schools, which is true. So I have to kind of make sense of that. But for all of our institutions, can we take what we've learned to dramatically bring down costs? I don't know, but I'm really hoping that that's one of the things that we all start to talk about.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have 2 kids who are are 3 or 4 years away from college, so I'm hoping Josh is right. I'm rooting for him. I think it's definitely the thing we need to solve.
Maybe instead of a third book, it's a petition.
Yes, right.
I'm encouraged that both of you've made two separate references to your next book during this conversation. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, Josh is a harsh taskmaster. So throughout the year, he set a benchmark. He's trying to kill me.
Okay, I'm gonna share with you two quotes from your book, both of which directly connect with the work that we do. And you've identified two preparation streams. The first one is helping faculty to prepare to teach under conditions of continued social distancing, masks, and other constraints. And then the second stream is less obvious. It's not something we tend to give a lot of attention to in higher education. We need to prepare our students to be dynamic learners in whatever environment they find themselves. It makes me wonder, first of all, why we haven't said both of those things before out loud and often. So how are we doing in addressing those two different streams of challenge?
Thanks for highlighting both of those things. I think they're probably our biggest challenge right now, getting our faculty prepared and getting our students prepared. And I would say that a lot of schools, as Josh said earlier, are trying to figure out this first one. I know at Georgetown, we ran week-long institutes all summer long. We had over 1,800 faculty members, which is the large majority of our faculty. About 85% of our faculty come through those week-long seminars and workshops to prepare for the fall. And a lot of schools are doing this in a variety of ways. Asynchronously, they're giving materials, they're making sure that help and support is available, and so on. So I think we're doing our best in this to prepare faculty and get them ready. And it's exciting to see a lot of faculty really engaged, really rethinking their pedagogy in ways that will have a long-term effect.
Absolutely.
I think. So if we go back to that question about innovation, in some sense, this might be the greatest kind of moment where we're really getting that kind of change to happen and to stand for a long time, I think. It's all good pedagogy, right? It doesn't matter whether you're teaching online and hybrid or in person. Everything that we're trying to get faculty to pay attention to is important in this space. But getting students, you know, or figuring out how to train students to learn in this environment, help them understand what it means to learn in this environment is a much more difficult challenge. In part, it's up to individual faculty members to be transparent about their expectations, to be really clear with them, to help them understand what it means to now learn not only in this environment, but in their class in this environment. And so it's a different kind of problem. Certainly students are in a different kind of resistance space. Many of them had terrible experiences in the spring, whether they were in high school and it went badly, or they were at schools that, you know, may not have done as well in the spring. The students were struggling. And so there's already a wall up in thinking about what it's going to mean to be in this new environment. And you have to be able to work around that. So the things that I've been encouraging our faculty to do, our campus to do, to reach out to students over the summer, to make sure that you start to connect with them early, invite them into the design process of your course, be transparent with them about what you're trying to do, and that things are going to fail, maybe even badly, and that you're going to adjust and that you're going to need their help. And then the fourth thing is to involve them, to really get them to be partners in the learning process and to make sure that they're helping the faculty members do this complex dance and that they're going to have to do now in this online space. But we are not saying it as loudly as it needs to be said. I don't think enough schools are paying attention to that problem yet. And that if the fall doesn't go well, I think that's probably going to be one, you know, maybe the biggest reason why it doesn't go well, that we just haven't recognized that there are two parties in this teaching and learning dynamic.
And they're both at very teachable moments, both of those groups, faculty and students.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, reflecting on, thanks again for pulling out those passages and reflecting on what Eddie said. What I've been thinking about a lot nowadays is timing. So we've all been operating under the assumption that this will end, like we will go back to something like it was before. And it could be, right? We could have a vaccine that could be produced quickly, that could be effective and manufactured and disseminated, and this could happen. But there's also some probability that will not happen or happen more slowly. And that for someone who is entering their freshman year now, their whole college experience is going to be different. We don't know what that's going to be. And it's a real question, what is the normal? And how do we actually prepare for that? We're putting so much of our energy into preparing for this fall, maybe this spring, but what would it look like if we said, well, we have to prepare for a 4 years of a residential experience that includes social distancing and masking and de-densification? I don't think we know the answers to those questions. And I don't really know how you could create this sort of high quality bundled residential educational experience that we provide, that we got as our college experience in this new environment. But I do think we need to start asking those questions now. And so that's where I sort of like to go.
For the next book,
you mean. Next step.
I take great comfort in the fact that you've raised these questions today, because I am fully confident in 6 months when your next book comes out, that all of those questions will be answered for us. So I just feel so much better right now than I did when we started.
All about the sushi, I think.
We just did our 50th episode, and wow. One of the things we reflected on are our favorite guests, and the two of you are on that list. So we thank you so much for being with us today, and we truly do look forward to having you back again in the near future.
Happy to come anytime.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for today. For all of the millions of listeners out there, you've been treated to conversation with Eddie and Josh today, and they'll be back again. So thanks. We'll see you soon.
We will.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.